time for another double feature, a long overdue recap of what the Kansas City Chiefs did in Carolina to squeak out a win against the Panthers, and now a preview of what the Chiefs are going to do to beat the Buccaneers at home. Welcome to the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. Doing two things at once this show. As we did last week, I had a cold, I had a busy week of school. All of a sudden, I realized it's Friday night, and I haven't done a show all week with so much to talk about. A ton of injury updates, a ton to talk about from the win over the Panthers, a ton to say looking ahead to Sunday, and then beyond that, next week, the Chiefs are playing the Broncos in Denver as the Broncos come off a bye week, that game being moved to Sunday Night Football prime time. So much to cover, and I just went ahead and disappeared for like 5 days. And I'm sorry for that. I hope I can atone for my sins once again this week with another mega episode of Roughing the Kicker covering all of that and anything else your heart could possibly desire. Let's get into it. In case you missed it, on Sunday, the Kansas City Chiefs went to Carolina and beat the Panthers 20-17. But man, it was ugly. It was not your traditional 20-17 kind of game. In fact, it felt like basically everything happened in the fourth quarter for the Chiefs. It basically did. 17 of the Chiefs' points came in the fourth quarter, and very, very quickly. So a ton of things happened in the fourth quarter, but it felt like the game started to change a little bit sooner than that. Dee Ford and Chris Jones were getting pressure on Cam Newton, finally taking him down a couple of times. That moved the Panthers out of field goal range back in the third quarter. That was a turning point in this game, and we'll recap it here, just play by play. I think this game actually kind of demands that, to show the flow of it, to show how much all of this, how much all of this shifted so quickly at the end. But the first thing we have to talk about, I guess, here is Alex Smith. This is one of the ugliest games I've seen from Alex Smith and for the Chiefs offense in a really long time. And it made sense on some level because Jeremy Macklin was out for this game. He'll be out again against the Buccaneers. But Alex Smith throws the ball, and he throws the ball 38 times in this game. He was 25 of 38, not a horrendous completion percentage. Cam Newton was 23 for 38. But Alex Smith throws for 178 yards. Doing that on 38 attempts is really, really bad math. He throws one deep interception that wasn't the worst thing, takes three sacks, has a 32.1 QBR. That was horrendously ugly. Spencer Ware gets 13 carries in the game for 61 yards. Not a horrible performance. It doesn't get fed very much. Receiving, the receiving game was fascinating. A highlight of this game was Tyreek Hill, and I think we'll have to get pretty comfortable saying, well, the real highlight here was Tyreek Hill. With Jeremy Macklin out, Hill got the bulk of the targets here. In fact, on a team that had 25 receptions, for a team that had 25 receptions on the day, Tyreek Hill had almost half. 10 catches for 89 yards, a 27-yard long for Tyreek Hill, because he can do so many things so well. He's getting great separation, he has great control over his body, he's proving his hands all the time. He can give him a check down in the backfield, put him into a screen, have him run a wheel route out of the backfield, or streak down the sideline. And he's going to find himself open, and whenever he's not open, he's so far done a really good job at creating separation. So 13 targets, 10 receptions for Tyreek Hill in the absence of Jeremy Macklin. That truly was, though, the only highlight for this offense. No touchdowns at all from the entire offensive side of the football. The defense, though, once again, pretty consistently here, had some really bright spots. Held Cam Newton down pretty well. One touchdown, one interception. 23 for 38, 261 yards for Cam Newton. He also led the team in rushing. Jonathan Stewart was a non-factor, 13 carries for 39 yards. Really controlled the run game very well, even with Cam Newton's crazy rushing touchdown. So Newton creates both touchdowns for the Panthers, plus the field goal that they had in the first quarter. Kelvin Benjamin, 7 receptions for 84 yards. Cam Newton did target Marcus Peters more than we've seen the last few weeks. He didn't fear Marcus Peters, and it kind of worked out. Again, though, whenever you hold the Panthers to 17 points, once again, a good offense struggling against the Chiefs' defense, I think you can take away really positive things from that. Justin Houston did not play in this game. He's questionable this week. We'll talk about him coming up here. The biggest play of this game, I think, is very easy to say. It was the only Chiefs touchdown of the game. It was Eric Berry's interception return for a touchdown. Not just a great pick and a great play on the ball, but an unbelievable return. Whenever I, frankly, am really glad that we didn't have to see the Chiefs offense try to get that ball into the end zone, that Eric Berry did it all himself. A really nice game for Eric Berry here. That's the entire set of bright spots for this team. So the offense struggles hugely. Alex Smith has a terrible day. The defense and Eric Berry save it. Dee Ford continuing to be a gigantic force. Let's go ahead and go through now, beat by beat, what happened in this game. Before the game, the inactives are announced. No Jeremy Maclin, no Justin Houston, no Jay Howard, no DJ White. Kendall Reyes gets the start for Jay Howard. And the defense started off with a nice statement here. Stopped Jonathan Stewart for 1 yard. Then Greg Olsen got out for 8. Cam Newton had a design run that went for 28. Eric Berry got burned on the fake. He later redeemed himself in this game multiple times. Cam Newton had a pass batted down. Then he hit Ted Ginn for 14 yards up against Marcus Peters again. Cam Newton not afraid to target Marcus Peters in this game. But Frank Zombo read the next play perfectly. Stopped Stewart behind the line of scrimmage. Newton tucked and ran on a draw on second down. It went for 3 yards. And on 3rd and 7, Newton dropped back, and the Chiefs got great pressure. Raheem Nunez-Roches and Tom Bahali got to Newton with help from Dee Ford, which forced a field goal, 3-0 Panthers. Right out of the gate, a good start from the defense, and the only field goal allowed in the game, again, for a 17-point effort. Not a bad way to end up wrangling it all together at all. Dee Ford, on that drive I mentioned there, that was Tamba and Nunez-Roches making the most of the play, but Dee Ford helped make it happen. Whenever I've been critical of Dee Ford and even skeptical of Dee Ford as of late, it's been that I want to see him doing stuff in the first quarter where he doesn't necessarily end up with the sack, where the big play isn't him, where it's not all built on one good step wherever he gets away from the offensive tackle and then all of a sudden turns a corner and then makes Derek Carr look silly in a situation where Derek Carr was obviously throwing the ball. I want to see Dee Ford do it whenever not only holding his own in the run game, but I want to see Dee Ford do it whenever he doesn't know what kind of play is coming, whenever it truly is on 2nd and 8, on 2nd and 5. I want to see him be able to read a play as it happens. I want to see him influencing plays where it is not his play, where Tom Bahali might end up cleaning it up because Dee Ford, say, caves in the offensive tackle, or where Dee Ford has to get double teamed so then a guy like Tom Bahali cannot get double teamed. That's what I've wanted to see from Dee Ford as he's grown this year, and we are seeing it now. You can put me on the Dee Ford bandwagon here. I think he still has growth to have, but whenever I say Dee Ford has room to grow now, that's a good thing. That is a bright spot. That is encouraging to me. I don't think Dee Ford stops here, and he's producing really well right now, and with this week, he may be producing opposite Justin Houston for the first time, at least for a little while. This is exactly what we wanted to be saying about Dee Ford. Say, all right, I can see him with his quick move around the edge. He said it in an interview, I think it was an interview with TJ Carpenter that we played on 8-10 a couple of weeks ago. It might have been somewhere else, but I think it was with TJ. Dee Ford said he hasn't really developed a new move. He's just doing his thing again. Well, I happen to disagree with the guy who would know. Watching Dee Ford rush the passer now is very different. He's not just, or at least you can see him do different things. He's not just lining up on the outside foot of the tackle and trying to shoot back and then turn a corner, which has been a real struggle for him. Having that kind of that hip elasticity, having the ability to turn the corner has been a real struggle for Dee Ford. He's getting better at that. But also, I can think of a couple of times playing like GIFs in my head. I can see Dee Ford bum rushing up against the right tackle against Carolina, where he would just square up and run him backwards. And that's a case where he's using his speed not to be elusive, but to be powerful. For him to be able to bring those things together, that's why Dee Ford is looking so good right now. He's pulling those pieces together. So the Panthers, that I forgive my tangent, but it's why I'm optimistic about Dee Ford. Now Davis returns the kick after the field goal. The broadcast thought maybe it had the Tyreek Hill needing to play more wide receiver snaps without Jeremy Maclin. I was very skeptical of that, and frankly not a huge fan, because I want to see Tyreek Hill with the ball in his hand as much as humanly possible, especially whenever he's going to be in space on kickoff returns. He did end up returning the punts, but on kickoff returns, I don't want to see the ball out of Tyreek Hill's hands. He has way more potential to bring it back, in my mind, than Nile Davis does, at least way more explosiveness. But Davis was there to return the kick, and I think he ended up just taking a knee, actually, so it didn't really matter. But that was a concern to me, and I was very skeptical of that logic for Tyreek Hill. It proved to be true. He ended up leading the team in receptions and targets, and I think yards as well. So I guess I buy it, and I guess it also says what Andy Reid and the Chiefs, especially offensively, the offensive coordinators and whatnot, think about Tyreek Hill. I think everybody would have assumed, hey, maybe this is the day for Chris Conley. Maybe this is the Chris Conley breakout game. And it was not, by any means. What it was this is the game where Tyreek Hill gets the bulk of the targets. And I'm totally comfortable with that. I think he's more explosive than Chris Conley is right now. And Tyreek Hill is, what, 9 games into his NFL career? Super excited about his growth as well. That's why he wasn't returning the kicks. And the Chiefs offense... God, okay, forgive me. The Chiefs offense, I think every week, either starts the game off by throwing a 1-yard screen to Anthony Sherman, or by throwing a 47-yard bomb to someone who's not going to catch it, because Alex Smith's not going to make that throw most of the time. I can't think of the Chiefs ever starting and forgive the hyperbole, I can't think of the Chiefs ever starting an offense, or starting a day on offense with like a nice 12-yard gain. I just don't think that ever happens. And they stayed in character here, this time going with a screen to Spencer Ware that went for 1 yard to start the game, really putting the fear of God in the Panthers. That was nice. Second down, though, was a nice pass to an open Tyreek Hill for 10 yards, trying to get rid of my cynicism, which I appreciated. Then after a short run, a great block by Laurent Duvernay-Tardif sprung Spencer Ware for 12. LDT has made great strides. That's another guy that, if I have to look back into my preseason concerns, I had concerns about the development of Steven Nelson, but he has developed very well. I have my concerns about Philip Gaines staying healthy, but he's been tremendous. I've been very optimistic. If you listen to the show in the preseason, you know I was very optimistic about Philip Gaines and saying he was very important, not necessarily critical of him, just hopeful. That's gone great. Critical of Dee Ford, that's going well. Critical of Laurent Duvernay-Tardif and doubtful about Laurent Duvernay-Tardif's development, and he has made fantastic strides here. Also in this game, Zach Fulton was never an issue. Nor was he ever going to be. I have increasing faith in this offensive line. Even though this game had a lot of penalties, I have increasing faith in the offensive line. I think Mitchell Schwartz was rated as the number one right tackle in the league the last week, according to Pro Football Focus. He's been playing very well whenever he's not jumping off sides. Eric Fisher, we don't talk about Eric Fisher anymore because he's not a problem anymore. And I think that's becoming the deal with the whole offensive line, except for some false start penalties that are frankly kind of bizarre that they keep being a problem. Aside from those, the offensive line is not only filled with guys who aren't a problem, we're seeing every week, I feel like I'm seeing every one of these guys make one big block that springs Spencer Ware open for 10, 12, 15 yards. I'm making a lot of asides today because there's a lot to talk about, but for all of the guys I was critical of, I was doubtful of Laurent Duvernay-Tardif's development. He's developing super nicely so far and had a great block here to spring open that play for Spencer Ware. Then on 1st and 15, Demetrius Harris dropped a short line of the scrimmage pass that wasn't going to go anywhere anyway, but Demetrius Harris has hands of stone. 2nd and 15, Alex Smith dodged some pass rushers, kept his eyes downfield, ended up tucking it and running for 6 yards. It was a nice play. He did everything you could have asked for on that play. But then 3rd and 9, Smith heaved a deep ball into double coverage to Hill that was picked off at the 10-yard line. I didn't much mind that interception in the grand scheme of things. The Panthers started on the 29-yard line. What I did mind, though, is if he puts it a few yards deeper, that's probably a Tyreek Hill touchdown. The safety read it perfectly, and Smith really needed to beat the safety there with the throw to either get the ball down and there faster or to look the safety off with his eyes, because as soon as Smith, if you watched the All-22 tape, I think it was, or just one of the angles that they had on CBS, as soon as Smith sort of turns his head towards Tyreek Hill to begin the heave of that, the safety just sprints over to where the ball is going to be and picks it off perfectly. It was a great defensive play. So Smith either needed to get the ball there quicker or needed to look off the safety, and that's probably a touchdown. The Panthers got the ball back then, ran a little reverse that ended in a 2-yard gain, and Cam Newton got basically the whole defense in his face. Steven Nelson stuck right with Kelvin Benjamin, a nice play by him. Then on 3rd and 9, Newton went to Olsen for about 8.5 yards, and then the Panthers did not go for it here because where they were on the field, I think I would have gone for it, for as well as Cam Newton had been, or as good as Cam Newton always is at picking up 4.5 yards. I think I might have risked it there if I was the Panthers, but they didn't. They punted. And then Smith started the drive by rolling left and hitting Travis Kelce for 5 yards. Next, a delayed handoff to West went for 2. Then on 3rd and 3, Alex Smith had a perfect deep shot for Albert Gator Arms Wilson, who just let the ball go right between his hands as the defender was closing in. It should have been a big play. Wilson's afraid of getting hit, and I get it. I would be too. I would be afraid of running full speed down the sideline, devoting my body to catching a football, and then getting destroyed by a safety or whatever. I would also fear that. I probably wouldn't play receiver in the NFL because I don't want to be hit that way. And Wilson does it all the time. It's just, it's constant where he's making kind of questionable effort plays. And I don't mean to ever really question a guy's effort. I think it's really hard to do smartly. But in this case, you can see it happen to where maybe it's not effort, but it's the mindset to close out a play. And Wilson just failed at it badly. So it should have been a big play. Instead, the Chiefs punt. It was not a good punt either. The Panthers get the ball on the 26-yard line, which, for comparison, after, you know, the weeping and gnashing of teeth of Alex Smith's interception, was a 3-yard improvement on the Panthers' last possession. So take deep shots and have them get picked off at the 29, whenever you want. Fine by me if you're going with bad punts as the alternative. After that, Cam Newton takes a shot to Greg Olsen up on Eric Berry around the first down line in the middle of the field, and Eric Berry broke it up just beautifully. A great play by Berry. Next play, Berry catches Jonathan Stewart behind the line of scrimmage. Another great play. Then on 3rd and 10, Dee Ford sack. It was undone, though, by a late penalty call on Phillip Gaines for holding. A free first down for the Panthers. It was killer. They would have been punting from deep in their own territory. Dee Ford lost a sack off his resume here. And the Phillip Gaines holding penalty, which was not a great call. It was understandable. It could have gone either way. I'll say that much. And that undoes the sack by Dee Ford. It's a free first down for the Panthers. Then on 1st and 10, deep shot to Ted Ginn Jr. Marcus Peters just about had the pick, but Ted Ginn kind of poked it out of his hands. 2nd and 10, Steven Nelson and company turn a screen pass into a loss of 1. Then on 3rd and 11, another stupendous play by Marcus Peters, breaking up a pass to Devin Funchess. And then a punt by Graham Gonneau, because Andy Lee was out with a hamstring injury. So the kicker, Gonneau, was doing the punting this game. So the Panthers end up punting it back. Again, I can't not highlight enough, the growth of Steven Nelson has been tremendous in the slot as the nickel guy. I don't ever want to see him as the fifth corner, as the fifth defensive back on the field with the two safeties. I cannot stress enough, I don't ever want to see Steven Nelson moving to the outside, because he's a huge value at this covering the slot, and he is a liability outside, in my opinion. But his growth has been tremendous. If Nelson, Gaines, and Peters can stay healthy, and all of those guys have had injury issues. Now, Peters just being that he's missed practice this week, so maybe Peters is overblown. But Nelson's had some injury issues, Gaines has had tremendous injury issues, and now Peters is on the radar also. If those three guys could stay healthy, we'd be talking about one of the best secondaries in the NFL for the next 5 years. It's truly that good with these young guys. And it's that good with guys who are only going to get better for the next several years. Chiefs get the ball back. Couldn't turn the corner on first down. Another short run on second down. Then on 3rd and 6, a short pass to Ware went in space, and Ware got knocked out of bounds by Luke Kuechly, a yard short of the marker. Chiefs decide to punt and not go for it on 4th and 1. On the punt, the ball was rolling out of bounds inside the 1, and Kenneth Acker screwed it up, which was frustrating, knocking it into the end zone. First down, read option by Newton. Ford went with Jonathan Stewart. The rest of the defense couldn't stop Newton. Mike Tolbert was stopped on 2nd and 1, though, which was nice. But on 3rd and 1, Newton went back to pass, overthrew Kelvin Benjamin with Marcus Peters in coverage, but Peters was called for holding. This one was a close call. I wouldn't have thrown this flag without question, but another free first down for the Panthers on that penalty. Then on 1st and 10, Stewart ran for about a dozen, kept the bit of success there. Newton went down for no gain after that. Then Newton hit Benjamin for 14. First down, Peters then jumps a route on Ginn. Nelson about finishes it with the interception, but does not happen. Then 2nd and 10, holding on the Panthers, undid a short gain. 2nd and 20, this is the point where you're feeling pretty good about the Chiefs offense here. 2nd and 20, Newton stayed tall in the pocket and threw to Peters again. This time went to Ed Dixon for a gain of 26, just a killer. Peters jumped the route and didn't get the pick, and that's what happens with Marcus Peters. That's whenever, for all of the things you can say, well, give and take it away. That right there was the rare time, frankly. That's the rare time where Marcus Peters should have had a pick, but he missed it. He jumped the route, missed it, and it turned into a gain of 26 to Ed Dixon. So then, a completion to Kelvin Benjamin got the Panthers close. Cam Newton then rolled one in, fighting through traffic for 5 yards on the ground. Touchdown, Panthers. At this point, it's 10-0, and you can't be feeling great about how it's been going because the Chiefs' offense has been so anemic. At this point in the game, I was sitting here going, all right, well, if the Chiefs go get any points here, we have a little bit of optimism to have. And the Chiefs tried to kick it off with a jet sweep to Tyreek Hill, which went for 12 yards. That was a nice, you know, try to attempt at jump starting something. But then Smith took a no-risk deep shot after seeing the Panthers jump off sides. Didn't complete it, but the Chiefs moved into 1st and 5. Obviously, they threw the ball backwards. A screen to Tyreek Hill went for -1, which was infuriating. 2nd and 6, Ware goes for 3. 3rd and 3, a pitch to Ware on an option. Worked out with a nice little shimmy. 1st down for the Chiefs. Nice play by Ware there. But on 1st and 10, Smith went deep to Travis Kelce. You had to reach down, but still needed to catch it. It would have been a huge play. That was the 3rd drop of the day as well for the Chiefs. Kelce needed to pull that one in. 2nd down, false start on Eric Fisher. 2nd and 15, a short pass to Ross Travis. Picked up 5 yards. Then on 3rd and 10, Smith ran around for a few seconds and couldn't find anybody. And the Chiefs have to punt. Now the pressure goes back to the defense here. And the defense has been great. But whenever you can't give the defense off the field for a few minutes, and you're not producing any points of your own, it's going to wear on literally any defense, including this Chiefs defense, which has been so good as of late. 1st down, though, Newton hits a diving Greg Olsen for 14. Jonathan Stewart goes for 5. Kelvin Benjamin just existed as a taller person than Steven Nelson, climbed up Steven Nelson's body, and Cam Newton hit him for 18. It was great coverage, but Benjamin was just bigger. Then Greg Olsen dropped the next one. Then Stewart couldn't pick up a yard around the edge. Then 3rd and 10 became 3rd and 5 after a jump offside by D. Ford, which is now somehow forgivable because D. Ford is Von Miller all of a sudden. I'm very confused. And then Kelvin Benjamin on 3rd and 5 was matched up with Kenneth Acker. So obviously that ended in a 1st down. Phillip Gaines was out of the game at the time. Then Cam Newton throws at Peters again after getting great protection and hit an open Devin Funchess for a 38-yard touchdown. After the play, Peters was talking with Ron Parker. It looked like Peters was expecting Ron Parker to be back there behind him in coverage, to have some help behind him. It wasn't there. No bueno for the Chiefs. A 17-0 Panthers lead was, I mean, it was apocalyptic. And at this point, I mean, to realize now the Chiefs had to score 20 unanswered points, the odds of that happening at this instant, if you would have told me, hey, you know, the Chiefs are going to have to score 20 unanswered, which I guess they kind of did have to do, I would have been very, very, very pessimistic. So the Chiefs start from the 25-yard line with a 1:52 left in the half. Smith goes to Conley, went for 12 yards. Spencer Ware returned to the game. He was out for a little bit. Then a false start on Mitchell Schwartz, moving back. Next, West was going out of bounds. Thomas Davis shoved him into the 1st down marker guy, almost killed that poor old man. An extra 15 yards there for the Chiefs. Then 1:26 left at the 47. A screen to Albert Wilson got 5 yards and out of bounds. 2nd and 5, Smith scrambled and threw it away. 3rd and 5, a screen to Albert Wilson got 4 yards. He flinched and tried to spin around a tackler, which did not work. Just run forward, Albert Wilson. And then 4th and almost 2 yards. A super nice play here. Ja Reed comes in as an extra offensive lineman. A lot of motion, which I thought maybe they're just going to try to get the Panthers to jump offside, which I would have been upset about. But a lot of motion. Sherman goes right out of the backfield. I formation. Sherman goes right out of the backfield. And Smith sort of turned towards him. Actually, he thinks Smith, if memory serves, Smith did a whole 180-degree turnaround. But he went towards Sherman, so everybody would bite that the play was going that way. Then he continued the spin and did a little quick pitch to West. He might not have spun around the whole way, but he definitely went with the ball first, ball fake towards Sherman's side to the right, then pitched it to West around the left. Really nice ball motion from Smith. A 1st down and a nice chunk more there. Then a short pass to West goes for 5. A wheel route out of the backfield to Hill for 5 and a 1st. 33 seconds left, 2 timeouts. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, false start, moves them back 5 more yards. The fourth false start of the half by this offensive line, just killing me. Then a play action turned Smith into taking a sack, which he got face masked on. Should have been another 15 yards. Would have been an enormous turn of events there to get those extra 15. And it would have been a 19-yard swing, actually, because a 4-yard loss on the sack. But it did not happen. Short pass to Wilson, got 9 yards in the out-of-bounds. 3rd and 9, Smith took another snack. Another sack. Another snack would have been better. He could have had a nice, like, some orange slices in the backfield. 3rd and 9 takes another sack. Eric Fisher just got run around on that play, so we did talk about him there, but that was it. And then Cairo Santos comes in for a 47-yard field goal. It was good. It made it 17-3 Panthers. It was not a fun first half at all. The Chiefs were 1-7 on 3rd down. That's going to be a key to the Buccaneers game. We'll get to it soon. 3rd down conversions for the Chiefs have been just brutal this year. It was not helped by not having Jeremy Maclin, but it's been bad all year. Then the Chiefs start with the ball on the 21 after the half. On 1st down, a short pass to Albert Wilson goes for 6. Spencer Ware fights for 6 more on the next play. After that, the phrase "off the hands of Albert Wilson" was mumbled. on the broadcast, which was perfect. And then it was the pass was behind him as Thomas Davis was murdering Alex Smith in the backfield. That was also not good. Second and 10, quick start to Tyreek Hill on the sidelines, who lowered his head and took a couple of hits to get an extra yard or two for a 9-yard gain. Tyreek Hill is just a good football player at this point, which is really encouraging. Then on third and 1, Spencer Ware picks up the first down, giving the Chiefs a little bit of hope and a first down. Then on first down, Smith had time, looked deep more, and then he eventually checked it down to West for nothing. He should have thrown it behind him to D'Anthony Thomas, who had tons of space, did not see him. Second down, a 5-wide receiver set. Smith ended up scrambling and picking up 4. Then on third and 6, Smith rocketed it downfield to Hill. It was way overthrown, also out of bounds. That was a horrific, horrific 3 downs for Alex Smith. Missing the open guy and throwing it to a guy who got nothing, not being able to find an open guy on a 5-wide receiver set, and then way overthrowing and out of bounds throwing Tyreek Hill on 3rd and 6 was just horrific. Then the Chiefs punt, Phillip Gaines was ruled questionable to return with a neck injury at this point. The Panthers converted on 3rd and 6 with a bullet to Devin Funchess. Then Steven Nelson made another really great play on Kelvin Benjamin. 3rd and 5, Newton had no business converting it on the draw, but he did. Then on 3rd and 3, Newton hits Olsen for the first, beating Eric Berry on a 4-yard pass. Second, they get to 3rd down again. 3rd and 2, Newton did not get it. Dontari Poe was tweaked up on the play, but they went for it on 4th down and inches. The Panthers' offensive line had been winning. Now, without Dontari Poe, with your quarterback being a bulldozer, it seemed like easy money. They did convert on 4th and short. This was, I'm just telling you the 3rd down conversions on this drive, because this drive ends up going for 20 plays. Keep in mind also, here's a part of the reason why. Marcus Peters had a nice pass breakup on Benjamin, and then Peters took a knee, and this might have been the hip injury that's keeping him out of practice now. The Chiefs had a time when the defensive backs on the field were Eric Berry, Daniel Sorensen, Kenneth Acker, Steven Nelson, and Ron Parker. That's not super-duper encouraging. Parker went up to play defensive back for a little bit. On 3rd and 7, Ted Ginn beat Ron Parker deep on the sideline because Ron Parker was playing outside corner for the first time in, like, I don't know, since last season, I guess. Peters returned, and then Funchess beat him. Peters was limping pretty badly, at least noticeably. And the Panthers are just continually grinding down the field, but a Dee Ford sack moved the Panthers back, and then a Chris Jones sack moved them out of field goal range, and the Panthers had to punt after a 20-play drive. I think it was the longest drive play-wise in Panthers history, and it ended in a punt, not even a field goal, not even a missed field goal, but to end in a punt after moving 20 plays is almost impossible, but Dee Ford, and that's what I said at the beginning of the show, Dee Ford and Chris Jones, I think right there, turned, at least if they didn't turn the game, they made the game plausibly returnable again. Because if that drive's a touchdown, it's completely over. If that drive is a field goal, it becomes very, very difficult to see the Chiefs coming back. But to keep it here within 14 points after a 20-play drive, Dee Ford and Chris Jones get little gold stars for that one, by my money. Then on 1st and 10 for the Chiefs, Smith missed. Second, he had a shorter pass to Tyreek Hill. Hill spun through an arm tackle and picked up 27. It was beautiful. And I say spun through, I mean it. Like, he was getting wrapped up by diving arms of someone and spun out of it. He needs the ball as much as the Chiefs can possibly get it to him. He is so dynamic. And then he demands coverage. He demands attention. Whenever you have a guy that dynamic, who is a matchup problem all the time, but when you have a guy that dynamic, then all of a sudden, Jeremy Maclin's not getting double-teamed so much. Then Travis Kelce is getting lined up with just a linebacker more often. Chris Conley, even, is getting the lesser coverages. Tyreek Hill demands attention. The Chiefs need to recognize that and use him as much as they use him in this game. Maybe more. Fourth quarter, Travis Kelce gets 11 yards on 2nd and 9. On 2nd and 10, Hill pulled in a great 14-yard pass, dove and then turned sideways to catch it. 1st and 10, a short pass to Hill again. Hill took it for 10, then Hill went off the field. Next play, Travis Kelce was wide open in the end zone, and Smith did not see him. Another black mark on Smith's day here. 2nd and 10, then Smith overthrew a wide-open Chris Conley again in the end zone. Another mistake. Then on 3rd and 10, Ross Travis dropped the pass that would have been a gain for about 7. Reed needed to be calling plays to get it to Hill and to Kelce down there, and Smith needed to look to those guys first. This was tremendously disappointing and felt like the end of the game, and in a lot of ways, at least the end of most hope. Because we're in the fourth quarter, and they're in the red zone, and settling for a field goal, which made it 17-6 Panthers, But whenever you're in the red zone, especially, really the whole game, I would say, please, for this game, for the future, for the rest of the season, Andy Reid needs to be drawing up more plays to get the ball to Travis Kelce and to Tyreek Hill, and I would say right now, and Spencer Ware. But for the passing game, Hill and Kelce, and whenever Macklin comes back, Macklin. But right now, I think Macklin is probably the third playmaker on this in this passing game, because I think it might even be Hill, then Kelce, then Macklin. And they all do very different things and do it pretty well. But Reid has to be drawing up plays to get to those guys, and Smith needs to be looking to them first. That needs to be the priority. If you end up having to get the ball to Chris Conley or, God forbid, Albert Wilson, then fine. That's how it goes as you're going through reads and your plays. But for Smith to be making a decision on a play before he sees what Travis Kelce has done or what Tyreek Hill has done is insane. Don't ever throw the ball to Albert Wilson before you see if Travis Kelce got open or not. Because more often than not, that's going to be your better option. So at this point, it felt like bad news for the Chiefs. A run by Jonathan Stewart and Cam Newton got the Panthers a 3rd and 6. And then everything shifted in a big way because Eric Berry, just out of ex nihilo, comes up with a pick six, maybe the best play of his career. An incredible return on a great interception. It was exactly what the Chiefs needed here. There was pressure up the middle by a blitzing Daniel Sorensen and a couple other guys, actually. But Daniel Sorensen was the guy who was just free sprinting at Cam Newton. It led to the rainbow throw by Newton. Then Berry just jumped the route, and the return had 2 spin moves and like 4 broken tackles all the way into the end zone. Then the Chiefs do the right thing here. Nice job, Andy Reid. I had my doubts about you doing the right thing, but you did it. The Chiefs brought out the offense for a 2-point conversion. Smith hit Travis Kelce. Then all of a sudden, it is 17-14. Panthers still lead. The Chiefs ended up having 11 points in 1:35. I mean, that's just something that I don't ever see this team doing. And of course it happened with a pick six. That makes sense. But to have 11 points, compare these two stats here, okay? 11 points in 1:35. The Panthers had a 10-minute, 8-second drive that went those 20 plays and punted. 20 plays in 10 minutes for no points. The Chiefs score 11 in 1:35. And that's where good teams come from. The Chiefs didn't do it very conventionally. This isn't the way that like the Patriots can score, you know, 14 points in 2 minutes. But that's the being able to turn the momentum of a game like that is so important. And it all depends on being able to close on points. That's why I talk about points allowed all the time and points scored for my favorite metric for offenses and defenses. Because you can get all the yards, all of the time of possession you want, but it's all about converting it to points. Or on defense, not letting the other team turn it into points. So 11 points in 1.5 for the Chiefs. After a penalty, the Panthers started with the ball on the 8-yard line. Newton hit Benjamin for 12 up against Kenneth Acker. Then on a read option after that, D4 tackled Jonathan Stewart and Cam Newton. Like he went up to wrap up Jonathan Stewart, but then Cam Newton kept the ball, and then Ford got rid of Stewart and then went and got Cam Newton. Once again, that's all you can ask for from D Ford. That's the kind of growth that I've been most skeptical about. Because him eventually getting his speed move to translate into the NFL is one thing. Him developing another pass rushing move is another thing. And then him being able to read a run play like that is a whole other thing. And lately, D Ford's been doing all of those things. So, enormously well-read play by D Ford in a case where I've been very skeptical of his ability to do something like that. Then Ramiek Wilson held Greg Olsen to a gain of 5 in open field. He had no way of stopping the pass, but to be the only guy to take Greg Olsen down by yourself. Nice play by Ramiek Wilson, who, again, having a really nice year after being brought back to the team after being cut earlier in the season. But on 3rd and 4, Dontari Poe got pressure, and Cam Newton threw it to nobody. At this point, I was writing my notes for this game, exclamation points, because it felt like something was happening here. The Panthers punt it back, and Tyreek Hill returns Graham Gano's punt for 21 yards because there wasn't much hang time there. The Chiefs start on the 49-yard line. First down, Smith runs for 3. 2nd and 7, Ware picked up 8 behind great blocks by LDT and a lead from Sherman. But on 1st and 10, Ware had a great block on the Kuechly blitz. Smith ended up shooting it for about 10 yards deep for Kelce. Kelce ended up picking up 16 for another first down. Then on the next first down play, Smith avoids the sack by checking to Ware for a gain of 5. Second and 5, West comes in, 3 tight ends. West bounces the play backwards and gets 3, which was terrifying, but it worked out okay. Then on second and 2, Smith dropped back, put it in the end zone to Kelsey, and just put it a little bit too high. And this was frustrating. And it looked like Smith just missed it, but Nick Jacobs had a good tweet here. Said Luke Kuechly jumping in the air altered Smith's throw to Kelsey on the skinny post. If he isn't there, Smith leaves the ball down for a touchdown. I add parenthetically now, he had to put it there, otherwise it probably ends in an interception, and that would have ended the game more or less. So it was infuriating to watch in real time, but it was exactly what Smith had to do. He had to just hope Kelsey could pull that down. He couldn't. So the Chiefs settle for a field goal. The field goal is good. Santos hits it. It's 17-17 with 4:25 left in the game. And the ball's going back to the Panthers here. But with all of my Chiefs fan ignorance and hopefulness, I felt pretty good about it because the defense had really been holding its own, even riddled with injuries. Keeping in mind, Alan Bailey, done for the year. No Jay Howard in this game. The secondary had been beaten up all day. So a couple of nice plays by Fozzie Whitaker get the Panthers across the 40-yard line. Then a pass from Newton to Ginn beats Steven Nelson for 7. But on 2nd and 3, D. Ford gets around the right tackle in an absolute instant, unblocked, tripped up Fozzie Whitaker in the backfield. Then on 3rd and 5, Newton just sailed it past Kelvin Benjamin, and the Panthers have to punt again. A fantastic stop. I wanted, in this case now, with the Chiefs coming back on offense, I wanted to see the Chiefs force the issue. A deep interception, as it did at the beginning of the game, it does not scare me. But a short turnover of any sort did. You give the ball back to the Panthers close to their own end zone, and this game is all of a sudden disastrous and over. I wanted to see them push the ball here. It did not happen on this drive. On first down, Smith rolled right. It was a short, safe pass to Hill for 10 yards. That was fine by me. Get it to your playmakers again. Then Alex Smith made a dumb play, threw a pass, caught it, and threw it again. It was like he threw the pass. It was batted up. He caught it and threw it again. That's a penalty. It was only 5 yards, but that was a penalty. Then on 1st and 15, a screen to Hill went nowhere. Hill actually fumbled it, and the ball went out of bounds. That was totally mortifying. Then on 2nd and 17, Alex Smith took a sack. Then on 3rd and 21, a short pass to Tyreek Hill went for nothing. And this was very deflating again. This was sort of, it felt like the logical conclusion to a disappointing game that ended up in a loss for the Chiefs, because the offense needed to do something finally, and it just couldn't. All day, the offense just could not put it together. So the Chiefs punt back, and all of a sudden you go, well, when the Chiefs punted back, I thought this game's probably going to go into overtime, and I think the Panthers have every advantage in overtime here. Well, it didn't happen. The punt happens. Ginn went out of bounds with 30 seconds left after a nice return, but a block in the back moved the Panthers way back. So this time I'm thinking, yeah, okay, now we're at overtime game, overtime mode. The Panthers had 29 seconds and no timeouts, started on the 20. I didn't blame them for trying to push the ball down the field a little bit, but I didn't expect it to actually end disastrously for Carolina and miraculously for the Chiefs, because the Panthers started on the 20, and then Marcus Peters, on a completed pass to Kelvin Benjamin, Marcus Peters just grabbed the ball out of Benjamin's hands as Benjamin was trying to pick up a few extra yards. He just took the ball. But it was Newton just threw it to Cam Newton. Cam Newton threw it to Kelvin Benjamin. Benjamin caught it. Was running. Peters and somebody else, I think it was Ron Parker, don't remember. Peters and somebody else were just trying to take Benjamin down. And Peters just goes for the ball and just rips it away. He just rips it away. And there takes the ball back for the Chiefs in field goal range. With like 20 seconds left, the Chiefs have the ball in field goal range. Because Marcus Peters cannot be contained. Every week he's finding new ways to turn the ball over. And also, by the way, Marcus Peters and D. Ford, with those two guys, the Chiefs have two like Defensive Player of the Year contenders, which is so dumb to think about. Like, it's just absurd. But I mean, it's just an unbelievable play for Marcus Peters. I just don't even, I can't even remember what my emotions were at the time, because it felt like something that should not have been happening, or something that like where Benjamin could have been blown dead a half second sooner, or he could have just gone down on the play and they'd be talking about overtime. But he just took it back, and then Spencer Ware runs it for 11 yards, 13 seconds left. Then Santos came in for a 37-yard field goal, and it was good. and the Chiefs won 20-17 in just such an absurd game when nothing good happened until those back-to-back sacks on that 20-yard or 20-play drive at the end of it. Nothing good happened until then. And then everything good happened on the defensive side of the ball. Eric Berry, Marcus Peters, Chris Jones, Dee Ford. Some tremendous plays when the Chiefs needed it so badly. And the Chiefs win. The Chiefs win a ridiculous game. A game they had no business winning. A game when the offense was completely worthless. Alex Smith was terrible. The whole offense was, there was no Jeremy Mack, and the offense was just bad. It was a bad offensive game. And now the Chiefs are 7-2. That's just how it is. That just happened. They're 7-2 and the 2 seed in the AFC behind the Patriots. Leading the AFC West because they have the tiebreaker over the Raiders. The Patriots, by the way, are also 7-2 after losing to the Seahawks at home on Sunday Night Football last week, in case you missed that one. I'm just kind of speechless. The Patriots are 7-2. The Chiefs are 7-2. The Raiders are 7-2. The Broncos are 7-3. They're on their bye week this week. I mean, what else could you possibly ask for here? You have the tiebreaker over the Raiders next week. Hopefully, with a returning pretty healthy Justin Houston, the Chiefs are going to go to Denver on Sunday Night Football. They'll also have Denver at home on Christmas night. They're going to have the Raiders at home on Thursday Night Football, primetime. The Chiefs are not only in a really good place right now, record-wise, if nothing else, to win the AFC West, but to have home field advantage in a wild card game, but to have home field advantage after a bye week in the playoffs, whenever they would be playing what? The Raiders at home, the Broncos at home, the Ravens, maybe the Steelers, the Texans, or the Titans, maybe the Colts. What are those teams? What are you afraid of there? If the Chiefs do, in fact, and I think this has to be an absolutely number one priority for the Chiefs. That's why this game against the Buccaneers matters so much. You keep that record up. Get yourself a bye week. How good is Andy Reid after bye weeks? I can't imagine. Really, because the Patriots, in this case, in my mind, are the number one seed. And, God, if the Chiefs could somehow squeak that away. In fact, just doing some podcasting on the fly here, I'm curious what the Patriots' schedule is from here on out. See if we can find any losses for the Patriots in the rest of the season. For the Chiefs to have any chance at the one seed would be otherworldly, but to have a bye week against any of those teams, either the other AFC West teams, against whoever wins the AFC South or the North, either of those teams in Arrowhead, giving Andy Reid a bye week, you sure that you would, that anybody would, that the Chiefs wouldn't be favored against anybody? And then what about having the Patriots at home if that happens? The Patriots look like they're going to be pretty good all year until they get to at Denver, perhaps, on December 18th. That could be a struggle, but they're going to win every other game, it looks like, from here. It looks like the Patriots are going to go 13-3, if I had to bet. I'd be pretty confident 13-3 for the Patriots. I don't think the Chiefs are going to get there. So put the Chiefs at the 2 seed. They got a bye week and a game in the playoffs if they actually win this division. How do you not have them in the AFC Championship game? Now what happens is actually, you know, is they suddenly lose to the Buccaneers and then, you know, again to the Falcons, and they have a tough schedule from here on out, and I get it. But no one else is threatening. I don't know if I'm being too optimistic sounding, so let me go ahead and back up a little bit. Play that beep beep sound for whenever trucks back up in your head here. But the Chiefs have a difficult schedule from here on out with some very losable games. And I'll tell you exactly how many I think they lose here in a second. But if they beat the Buccaneers, which I think they will, then you got at Denver, at Atlanta. They should win every other game. You steal that win in Denver. No one else in the AFC, though, is what I was going to say as I was backing up. No one else in the AFC is going to going to chase that 2 seed. The number 2 seed in the AFC is going to the winner of the AFC West. So if the Chiefs can win, if they can beat the Raiders twice, then that's over. If you can beat the Broncos once and hope the Broncos stumble somewhere else, which I think they probably will, sounds good to me. I'll take that one. They could lose in Denver and in Atlanta. But you beat the Broncos at home, the Broncos lose one more game, Chiefs are the 2 seed in the AFC. I wouldn't be mad at that. Let's talk about you. You listening. If you like this show, if you care about this show, if you enjoy this, if this show helps you get through your day, and you think, you know what, I like this show so much, I want to be able to give back to this show, I want to help it out. There are a couple of ways you can do that. You can follow me on Twitter, at JB Briscoe. I always like to get my followers up and be able to have more conversations with you about the Chiefs and this show. In just a minute, we're going to talk about your takes and takeaways from the Panthers game, one of my favorite parts of the week. You can support the show that way. You can like the Facebook page, facebook.com/RTK show. Or you can write reviews on iTunes, help other Chiefs fans find it. You can go to the show on arrowheadaddict.com. They're always posted up there. You can subscribe to the show through iTunes or whatever phone app you use. Just go to it and search Roughing the Kicker. If you use a podcasting app and you search Roughing the Kicker and it's not there, tell me about it and I'll get it there. You can subscribe to the show. Make sure you always get them as soon as they come out. That's super beneficial to me to know not only how many subscribers are listening to this show by their own volition, not through Arrowhead Addict, but by subscriptions. That's really nice. Also, it's great for you because you know as soon as it comes out, you're getting it hot off the presses. The other way you can support the show is financially through Patreon.com. At Patreon.com/RTK, that is Patreon.com/RTK, you can give a little bit of money every month to support the show financially, to say, hey, this is worth this time, this amount of money. For me, this is a week-long process, usually doing 2 shows a week. I know I've failed that these last two, but doing either 2 shows every week or 1 mega show every week whenever my schedule demands it. This not only is able to fund my time a little bit so I can justify putting all this time together to make this show that I love making for you so much, it also makes me be able to do things like I did last Black Friday, almost a year ago now, buy this wonderful Blue Yeti microphone that has made my life so much easier, and I think it's made for a better quality podcast. And a lot of you have been doing this for a long time, and I cannot say thank you enough to the $20 group of the podcast donors at patreon.com, Ty Declare, at Ty Declare 44, Andy Simpson, Randy Singh, at Randy_Singh_, Ray Hines, at Big Turf Guy, Derek Vaughn, at D_Vaughn88. Those people are giving $20 a month to this show for whatever reason that they've deemed for this show to be worth that money to them. Cannot say thank you to those guys enough. $10 group is Christine Roadlander at C Roadlander on Twitter and Todd Sullivan at Tito Sullivino. Huge thanks to both of them as well. And then the $5 group is Josh Beadle. Everyone who's giving money to the show, I appreciate so much. If you just share this show with your friends, share the show on Facebook with your Chiefs fan friends and say, hey, I think you would learn something about this, about the Chiefs with this show, or I think you would enjoy it on your daily commute. Hugely appreciative of any way you choose to support this show. As always, thank you, and thank you for listening. Now we're going to the takes and the takeaways. After the game, after every game over on Twitter, I will let you know when it's time to start bringing in what you learned from every single Chiefs game, your hot takes, something that you think that you need to share with the world after this game, or just something you learned, some takeaway that you had. Let's start just in order. Justin Henderson said, literally everyone who dumps on Andy, Alex, play calling, etc., bite me. It's very aggressive, Justin. Why did you? Oh, here's why. He gave a justification. Sorry. He said, maybe they know what they're doing with the number one receiver, the number one left guard, the number one defensive end, the number one offensive linebacker, inside linebackers 2 and 3, and half of their outside linebacker number 1, outside linebacker number 2, cornerback number 2, and no Jamal Charles. Yes, the Chiefs are playing very injured, and Alex Smith, or I'm sorry, and Andy Reid has, or maybe most notably, Bob Sutton on the defensive side has done an unbelievable job at covering those weaknesses and those losses. Andy Reid is doing an increasingly good job offensively, trying to patch over all of the holes in this offense. After this game, I cannot give praise to Alex Smith. You listen to the show for long enough. I am totally happy with Alex Smith most of the time. This was a really bad Alex Smith day, so that is not... That is not something that I can join in the praise of Alex Smith for, but I'm willing to give Andy Reid some credit for being able, and especially Bob Sutton, for being able to patch over these holes in this team. From Mike Thomas, said Mike Thomas actually left the game early on, he said, and he said, unreal, I leave, and they decide to wake up. Listen, man, if you leave a game at, like, halftime and the Chiefs come back to win it, I'm not going to be mad at you. I'm going to assume that you were the reason they were losing. From Keyshawn Brown, said, Peters and Barry on defense, Santos on special teams won this game. Ugly win, but we'll take it. I'll take ugly wins as long as they are actual victories. It doesn't change the analysis of games, like back in week one against the Chargers. That changed the outlook of the season. If they lose that game, then all of a sudden the Chiefs are playing from behind this whole time. It was an ugly win, and the things that happened in the game don't change based off the result, but the way we look at it does. So I will take ugly wins and then still analyze them as we would have any other way. Also, from Captain Stucky, Stucky at Captain Stucky, last week, as I pointed out, I think he has Thumper from Bambi as his avatar, and I don't know why. He tweeted a bunch of yelling, which I appreciate. I think he was also pointing out something I didn't say about Marcus Peters. Marcus Peters punted the ball into the stands after his strip of Kelvin Benjamin, which is not good, but it was only a 5-yard penalty for delay of game for doing that, so I'm not actually that mad about it. But Chiefs win, drop the mic from Captain Stucky. From Keyshawn again, perfect quote. He said he was quote tweeting Chris Simbrower, who does some really good Chiefs artwork. So it's not always pretty, but it's what championship football looks like. Hell of a game. Sometimes I agree with that. I agree with that. That's what championship results look like. That's what the actual content of games doesn't change based off of the result, but the result obviously does. Matthew Livingston, holy crap! Defense stepped up big time when we needed it. Yes, this is what this team looks like now. The defense is what's determining how far this team can go, which is not what we expected at the beginning of the season. I thought this would be the first time in Andy Reid's tenure here where the offense was really the strength and the defense was going to be young and need to do some catching up. Bob Sutton has been absolutely tremendous, especially since the bye week. Keyshawn Brown again. Jones and Ford balled out. The secondary was sticky all day. Ware was clutch. Hill was better than expected. Tyreek Hill's growth has been, to me, I think the biggest surprise on this team, especially with what rookie receivers have done under Andy Reid. Chris Conley did nothing his rookie season, and whenever that happened with that kind of investment in Chris Conley, I sort of just assumed that this was an issue of Andy Reid's system is hard to pick up. Either Tyreek Hill is really smart and has picked up Andy Reid's system very well, or he's just so good that we're actually now realizing it's not really about the scheme as much as it's about having incredible talent. Justin Henderson, again, imagine if tight ends could catch all the first down balls and Alex had hit a couple of guys wide open in the end zone. Yes, this is where the offense has its room for improvement in exactly that. Watching this offense wasn't watching an offense miles and miles away from being competent. It wasn't watching an offense inches away from being very good. If all of the drop passes get caught in this game and Alex Smith misses less on his whatever three most egregious misses, then we're talking about we're having a really optimistic recap day here. Also, Stucky came back and said, just another walk in the park, Chiefs win. Jeesh. And then Chiefs defense and praying hands. I'm not sure still if I'm going to be able to continually try to read emojis on the show. I don't know how well they transfer, but I did enjoy the tweet very much. From Samir Hinjuna again on Twitter, at Hinjuna, we got so lucky. Love our defense. The offense was so anemic. How can we have faith in Alex Smith? Why can't we scheme open Conley, Kelsey, and I think Tyreek Hill saying 10, Tyreek Hill needs knockouts, not throw. Oh, kickoffs. Kickoffs. I got you, Samir. Here we go. Tyreek Hill needs to be returning the kickoffs, not Nile Davis. I talked about that earlier, and I would agree with that. Unless that's what it takes for Tyreek Hill to get, you know, be on the field the first snap of the offense. If he's returning the kickoff, he's probably not getting the first play on offense, and I want him on the field offensively as much as he can. So maybe that is what it takes there. But I don't have a ton of faith in Alex Smith right now. It was a bad game, his first game back from the concussion. I think he has room to improve in a way that I'm not like totally panicking, but it was bad. From Tiago de Souza Pinto, I think I probably got close-ish to your name. We'll see. As always, if I get your name wrong in this segment, just tweet me and say, here's how you pronounce my name. We're going to go Tiago de Souza Pinto. Underrated play of the game was the two-point conversion. 100%. I feel like I brushed over it even in the recap. That's something that simply has to happen there. Has to be pulled off. And the Chiefs did it beautifully and without much fanfare. It was a good move by Andy Reid. It was a great play called up. Alex Smith hitting Travis Kelce short totally worked. a tremendous play that, again, worth 2 points. That's big. That's a big swing in a game that's ultimately being decided by three. From Rae Hines, that big turf guy. So only got to see the first half. It was a great road win. The offense has to make changes. The Kansas City can beat Houston at home in the first round, but not much else. I think it depends on where the offense ends up. If this exact team shows up at home against Houston, then yes. But if you're giving me the Bengals at home, even the Steelers in Kansas City, perhaps, I really do not want to see Pittsburgh again. I feel pretty good about where the Chiefs are ending up, especially if they're ending up with a bye week here. Justin Henderson again. So to remember the camp when you were saying, hedgingly saying, it's hard to tell without pads, but Tyreek Hill looks like he can play. Yes, he not only has that crazy breakaway speed and the hands that we saw in camp, but now we're seeing the thing that we didn't know about. Can he take hits and stay on his feet? The answer, unanimously, yes. Yes, he plays like an actual football player, not like a track star in shoulder pads. Keyshawn Brown again. D Ford is now tied for first in sacks with 10, much in the league at this point. Much improved and not a bust. Also made a few plays in the run game today. 100%. That's the growth from D Ford that I've been dying to see that we're now actually seeing. It's tremendously encouraging. Also tweeting about the Panthers. Chiefly Bacon is his name, but it's at 3GravyCats on Twitter. Said he agreed with not wanting to see the Steelers. Said, I don't care if it's weak. I want the Chiefs to have the best chance of going all the way. The Steelers scared me and scarred me. That's exactly right. 100% perfect. I do not want to see the Steelers in the playoffs at all. One more thing from Justin Henderson. He said, maybe Eric Berry validated the offseason personnel decisions today, being on Sunday. He said, also, stupid cliche, but his presence is awesome. And this is something where I think still, I certainly have my concerns about what Eric Berry's actual ceiling is, his actual value is. Whenever he's playing as a deep linebacker, he's not worth $11 million. But if he can make plays in the secondary, and I've sort of by default assumed that he's done growing as a player, and I'm not sure if he is or not. I might have been a little quick on that. I don't think I am. I think he probably is done changing as a player. But his presence in the defense might actually be important. And the great read on the interception, taking it back for the touchdown, that's the kind of play where, this is going to sound so salty, I'm sorry, but it's the kind of play where it's like, it's kind of fluky. It was a great read to get the pick, but then being able to return it the whole way is not something, it's not something that Eric Berry does constantly. It's something he does every once in a while. And it was an enormous play that won this game. Like, he without Eric Berry, the Chiefs lose this game. And he also had several plays in this game where he was making those negative plays, tripping up, I think it was Fozzie Whitaker in the backfield, and breaking up a pass by the first down marker on Greg Olsen. Eric Berry had a tremendous game here. And maybe it's just hard for me to be my normal skeptical self with a player like Eric Berry, because we all sort of assume we know what he is, and he's like widely loved already. So for me to be skeptical about seeing more from D Ford makes sense, or made sense. Me being skeptical and wanting to see more from Eric Berry is a little bit more confusing. But I'm going to kind of stand with that now and say Eric Berry is had a tremendous game, one of his best games as a Chief, perhaps, at a very critical time. And his presence on this defense might actually just be worth those $11 million. Tampa Bay Buccaneers at Kansas City Chiefs. This is probably going to be a quick preview because I don't feel like I have a great read for this game. And I don't think any of us are going to until the inactives come out on Sunday morning. Jeremy Maclin is out again. Jay Howard is doubtful. And six others are questionable, including Justin Houston, Marcus Peters, Ontari Poe, and Derek Johnson. Peters was at practice on Friday but did not practice because of a hip pointer. Everybody else had varying degrees of being there, not practicing, practicing limited, etc. And I'm very concerned about how this actually plays out. If I had to guess, let's say Howard is out again. Obviously, Maclin is definitely out. Maybe Houston gets a few snaps, but is very limited. Or, frankly, though, as it was with Jamaal Charles, I kind of just want to see him rest and get healthy until it's time to come back. And I've said for a solid month now, this is when I wanted to see Justin Houston's first game in return. We were all getting very excited with the talk of Houston coming back a couple weeks ago. This is the day I want to see Justin Houston come back and get a few snaps, get back up the game speed and into game shape, then hopefully he can be a real force in Denver next week. But there's no assurance of that actually happening. Also, with Jamaal Charles, a bit of news that I just saved for now. Jamaal Charles had another surgery this week. NFL Network's Ian Rappaport said that the second surgery is actually good news for Charles' chances of returning this year, which I was very confused by. So here's Rappaport's report. He said, "It sounds like bad news, but it's actually probably the best news Jamaal Charles could hope for. Here's what happened this last couple of weeks. He had surgery to trim, not repair, but to trim his meniscus on one knee that happened a couple of weeks ago after he went to IR. Then on Monday of this week, he had surgery to trim the meniscus on the other knee. From what I understand, this increases his chances of returning for the playoffs or maybe real late December. If he did not have the second surgery to his other knee, he would not be able to be back at all. This is basically Jamaal Charles checking off one problem, checking off another, and then checking off another problem with a knee scope. This increases the chances of him being healthy again when the Chiefs may need him most." So there's the logic to this being a good thing for Jamaal Charles' return for the Chiefs. And I certainly hope there's something to that. That would be super encouraging. But I'm not holding my breath on the early return of Jamaal Charles. What I am holding my breath on, though, is the return of Justin Houston and what these questionable guys do on Sunday. And even if there are some injuries, some significant injuries here, say Jay Howard is out again, Jeremy Maclin being out again, if Justin Houston is out again, as long as Dontari Poe and Marcus Peters are there, if the same defense from last week gets jogged back out there this week, I think the Chiefs should be fine, though I do have a tremendous concern about the offense. I talked about the third down conversions earlier, and Cody Tapp on Twitter tweeted that the Chiefs are converting third downs less than 35% of the time. That's 28th in the league. The Bucs are allowing third down conversions less than 35% of the time, which is fourth best in the league. Again, that's 35% of the time, basically, for both of them. Less than 35% of the time, the Chiefs are getting those conversions. Less than 35% of the time, the Buccaneers are allowing those conversions. I'm not all that afraid of Jameis Winston. I'm not all that concerned about Mike Evans if Marcus Peters is out there. I'm certainly not concerned about Vincent Jackson or whoever else they're running out opposite Mike Evans up against Philip Gaines. I feel fine about most of those things. The whole defense is in good shape. Doug Martin's been battling injuries all year, but he's a good NFL running back. So is Jonathan Stewart, and Jonathan Stewart didn't do anything. Frank Gore did just about nothing. The Raiders run game didn't do anything. We saw a little bit of a scare from Mark Ingram before shutting him down. What am I supposed to be afraid of on the offense here? I understand that Jameis Winston has a big arm. Whoop-de-doo. All of my fears in this game, as they have been for a few weeks now, or maybe not, maybe this is a new thing. My fears on the offensive side, though. We're looking at teams that have good offenses, bad defenses. The Buccaneers are a fringe. The Buccaneers are 4-5 in the NFC South, and they're the exact type of team that can spoil some days for teams that should be doing better, should be winning games. And they're also the exact type of team that can just blow one to a bad team. They're one of those teams that can end up on either side of any game without being super surprising. The Buccaneers put up 40 points, put up 40 some points up against the whatever, some give me a mediocre team. You're not actually here in the room. They put up 34 against the Niners and won by 17 points. Of course they did. That makes sense. They beat the Panthers. They won in Carolina by 3, 17-14. That's interesting. Oh, they lost at Arizona in week 2, 40-7. Okay. They won in Atlanta, 31-24. What is that? I mean, just those first 2 weeks. Week 1, win in Atlanta by a touchdown, 31-24, against the Falcons that look like Super Bowl favorites right now. Next week, they lose in Arizona, 40-7. The Cardinals, who could not get off the ground. So then they lose two more. They lose to the Rams at home. They lost to Los Angeles, 37-32. They gave up 37 points to Case Keenum and Todd Gurley. Then they gave up 27 points against the Broncos and scored only 7. Then they only gave up 14 to the Panthers and won 17-14. Last week, they beat the Bears 36-10. The week before, they lost to the Falcons in the rematch game at home in Tampa Bay, 43-28. The week before that, they lost to the Raiders. I don't know how to put my finger on the Buccaneers. Also, by the way, Vincent Jackson is actually out for the year, so he's not around at all, as if it was an issue anyway. It's not. I don't know how to put my fingers on this Bucs team. The one stat that Cody pointed out, I think, is good, that it's issues that the third down conversion issue is going to be huge. And I don't even I don't even have much stomach to, like, go to the stats as I usually do for previews to say, well, here's where this team really strives or really struggles, because they're so up and down. That's the nature of this team. It's the nature of having a young quarterback and a young team and in a questionable defense. And with all the injuries the Chiefs have, I just don't. If you told me all those guys that were questionable are going to play, I'd say, all right, give me the Chiefs by a dozen. So none of those guys play. I say, all right, give me the Bucks by two. I guess if none of the questionable guys play, I would say give me the Bucks by a dozen, because there's a lot of big names there. But say some mix of those guys play, and all right, maybe the Bucks squeak one out here. But I feel like I'm playing really blindly, because we don't know what the Chiefs team is going to look like. I never know what the Buccaneers are going to be. And the offense right now is terrifying. Alex, I don't know. It seems like Jeremy Maclin has not actually been that good this year. He has not been relied on very deeply or very, very closely by Alex Smith. That's been a pretty benign relationship so far. So I'm not super pressed for trying to find happiness in that, or to try to come up with some logic to say, well, Alex Smith is, you know, just whenever he gets Jeremy Maclin back, no, they're still going to struggle. The offense has still been struggling. But without Jeremy Maclin, it was really bad last week. But the Chiefs are going back to Arrowhead. I think they're going to have a little bit of a chance to get back in more of a rhythm. Alex Smith's second week back after taking that week off to get his head right, or whatever, his ear injury, depending on who you're trusting and why he was out last week or 2 weeks ago. I think most of those questionable guys probably play and play at a pretty high level. I trust the defense right now. I think Bob Sutton and the defense puts together something good enough to keep Jameis Winston and Mike Evans from somehow ruining their game plan. I'm just not hideously concerned about that. I have no fear from the muscle hamster, Doug Martin. I have total faith in the defense and no faith in the offense. And that's not a great place to be as a fan or an analyst or a fanalist or whatever. Total faith in the defense, no faith in the offense. And I don't see the Buccaneers really outscoring what Carolina did at home last week in Arrowhead. So give the Bucs 17 points. I mean, man, really, look at this. Since the bye week, I love these stats so much. After the bye week, Raiders score 10, Saints get 21, Colts get 14, Jags get 14, Panthers get 17. I mean, since the bye week, the Chiefs haven't given up more than 21 points, and they've played good offenses and the Jags. That's what the Buccaneers are. So give the Buccaneers 17 points. Then the question is, can the Chiefs get 20? Can they get 20 again? Can they get 21? Can they get 24? I think we see a little bit of a bouncing back here. I think the Chiefs move the ball well enough. Maybe there's another defensive player too. Also, the Chiefs win this game 24-17. It's not with a ton of great optimism. I don't really love saying that the Chiefs are going to score even 3 touchdowns at this point. That's not something I'm actually super hopeful about. But I think it's what they have to do in this game. I think it's what they will do in this game. I think the Chiefs win it by a touchdown at home against the Buccaneers and then go to 8-2. Then they have to go to Denver, as I mentioned earlier, is on a bye this week. So they're going to be well rested. I would hate to see the Chiefs lose to a very mediocre Buccaneers team at home and then all of a sudden be on an equal playing field with the Broncos coming off a bye in Denver next week. The Chiefs need to go in as the having the upper hand. Even if they lose in Denver, then the pressure just on to win that Christmas night game in Kansas City. Pressure was already on the Chiefs to win that Christmas night game in Kansas City. They're going to be favored in that game by a couple points no matter what. And that's probably going to be how the division is decided, as long as they take care of business elsewhere on the schedule. But they cannot. And maybe it's greedy to say, all right, you've got 5 wins in your pocket. Make it 6 in a row here, or else we lose faith in you. That's not too much to ask for a really good team. Asking the Patriots to go 8-2, not a huge deal. Asking the Broncos to go 8-2 didn't work out, which is nice. But asking a team to go 8-2 isn't insane. It feels insane because we're Chiefs fans. And on a large scale, at the beginning of the year, to tell the Chiefs to go 8-2 after the start would have been a lot to ask. I probably wouldn't have been able to do that. I think in the preseason, I had them going, losing maybe in Texas to the Steelers, in Carolina, losing 3 of those games already. At least 7-3 at best. But just look at this game. It's a Buccaneers team that doesn't have that strong of an identity versus a Chiefs team with a really strong defensive identity as long as their guys are somewhat healthy and still really struggling on offense. Give me Tyreek Hill to have 2 touchdowns in this game. Why not? No? Okay, make it 1 touchdown. Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce both get a touchdown in this game. Chiefs win 24-17. Book it. I did it again. I may unfairly leave you without a podcast for like almost a full week. I guess actually a full week in this instance. I may leave you without a podcast for a full week. Whenever I come back, you better believe the next show is going to be over an hour. Because man, that Panthers game was unbelievable. The fourth quarter was tremendous. The first 3 quarters were just horrendous. But we saw what the Chiefs defense is capable of. Now we can look ahead to Sunday and ask, what is the offense capable of whenever it needs to step up here? I think the defense holds its own, but can Alex Smith get back on the horse? Can Andy Reid get back to the offense that we saw going up against the Colts, where he was scheming guys open? I want to see Chris Conley and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce schemed open on Sunday. And if that happens, I think the Chiefs are going to be 8-2 at the top of the AFC, preparing for a divisional game up against the Denver Broncos for the crown in the AFC West. What more could you ask for? Two podcasts a week, probably. I'll work on it. Thanks for listening. Bye, Mom.